secular humanism begins in doubt. But doubt should be only the beginning for anyone who has lived under the sway of religion. The rejection of religious commitment leaves a vacuum demanding to be filled.
Okay, people say to me, all right, okay, I give up religion. So what do I put there? What do I fill that empty room with? Much of the book is Kitcher telling us how this vacuum can be filled. What is so very refreshing here is his primary purpose, as he writes, quote, the construction of an approach to a secularist mentality, a positive approach to secular humanism, end quote. There is so much that is negative from those who write about religion and the need to divorce oneself from it. Your former president and I had a telephone conversation where I was saying to him, Roy, I am not going to say anything negative much about religion because it doesn't help anything. It simply makes people more unhappy, or they get more unhappy with you or the person telling them that, or they even dive further into whatever belief system they had. It doesn't help. And he makes it quite clear that there is a positive way forward. And our writer after Kitcher, the last one, Phil Zuckerman, who some of you remember from here, offers also a clearly positive way forward. Starting from another writer's statement, quote, it is wrong, always, everywhere, and for anyone to believe anything on the basis of insufficient evidence. End quote. Kitcher tackles this whole question of doubt. What we have when we do not embrace religion or religious teachings, and what is positive about it. Religion, some religions that you may know or be familiar with, give you an answer for every possible question you could ever come up with. They have an answer. Others sort of struggle to find an answer, but they're always there to give you something to chew on. I was asked in my ministry career of many years, a lot of questions about why should I believe this, what should I believe, what should I do, so forth and so on, being asked somehow or other, I was supposed to tell them what the answer was. And generally, thankfully, early on I realized, through the good graces of the education I had in divinity school, that you basically flip the question to them. And what do you think is the answer? In his chapter, Values Vindicated, Kitcher examines how secularists, that is, people who hold no religion, can obtain a clearer and more convincing account of ethical values than anything religion or any of its traditional forms can provide. And it's the ethical issue that's mostly the issue for people who say, if I give up religion, then on what basis do I make ethical decisions? It does not need a detour through some dim and remote transcendent, as is the situation with religion, which is all transcendent in nature. Transcendent here meaning simply beyond the here and now, essentially the supernatural. Kitcher notes that secular humanism is a positive perspective, one concerned with the value of human lives in a thoroughly natural world. Secular humanism goes further than proponents of religion and the transcendent. They foresee successors to contemporary religious life that draw in on a far broader range of cultural items. Secular humanists see borrowing from poets, filmmakers, musicians, artists, scientists, cultivating social institutions to develop the senses of identity and community traditionally fostered by religious community. Mm-hmm. For Kitcher, lives matter when they touch others. especially when through our actions promoted by recognizing what other people want or need and attempting to provide the things required. Since this is the only life a person has, Kitcher says, we should be committed to salvage, not salvation. We must seek community and be committed to joint action. In place of religion, he says, that thoroughly secular societies can contain structures enabling people to enter into sympathetic relations with one another, to achieve solidarity with their fellows, to exchange views about topics that concern them most, to work together to identify goals that matter to all members of the group, and to pursue those ends through cooperative efforts. Golly, this sounds so much like a great charge to members of the Jefferson Center. However, Kitcher tells us that building a fully satisfying, fully secular world will take time, it will take effort, and perhaps a little luck. But there is no strong evidence for supposing the task to be impossible. And the point that he makes is you and I can start right now to continue in this effort. He ends his book on what he calls the primary reason for religion, the fear of death. Have you ever thought of that? Think of that for a minute. The primary reason for many people for religion is basically, and psychotherapists really get at that, the fear of death, the fear of one's own personal end, at the prospect that you will no longer be. This was a very helpful chapter for me as I approach latter years, I can assure you. This may be his most important, and it may be his most beneficial chapter in this entire book. He ends this fascinating trip through what it means to be a human and how to live one's life to one's death with these words. Quote, a secular worldview ought to be forged in dialogue, even in passionate interaction with all that has been most deeply thought about, what it is to be human, including whatever can be refined out of religious traditions. He does not throw religious tradition out the window. He builds on it. For secular humanism is only secondarily secular. It is primarily humane. I would very strongly recommend this book as a potential book for the book group here, or if the book group decides not, then I certainly suggest it to many of you to read. It may take you two, it may even take you three times reading it, but it is certainly worth the time. Now, last, but wait, this is the last. And I saved the best for last because I know this man personally. Harvey and I had the good fortune again to be with Phil Zuckerman in March in Claremont, California, where he teaches at Pitzer College. Phil is probably the most internationally recognized sociology professor anywhere. He's young, I mean, he's like in his 40s to me, a little boy. Phil is about as easy to talk to as anybody I've ever met. It's just like you would never believe he was this giant in his field and speaks from one part of Europe to the other part of South America, is constantly going, writing 3 books published by Oxford University Press. Unbelievable. He has written a compelling book for the general reader. It is not an academic book. It is a compassionate addressing of perennial issues regarding secularism, atheism, humanism, agnosticism, and free thought in general, hence its title, Living the Secular Life, New Answers to Old Questions. Okay? What Zuckerman really does is take what Kitcher has said in his book and really give it sort of down-to-earth, good reading. And some real important things that you can digest and say, okay, now I get it. Like Kitcher's book, I read this book
Well, I've read it three times. I've not just read it twice. I've read it three times. It is so good. He pairs fascinating new research, most of which he has done, with real stories of non-religious men and women from across the country to illuminate this important demographic shift to living non-religious or secular lives. It examines the tremendous growth of the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. Those of you who have been around here with the center for a long time remember that word. Since the very beginning of the Jefferson Center, when one of our dear founders, who I really wish were here with us because he had so much to do with starting this, SOU Professor Mark Shibley, who still lives, but he is not involved with the Jefferson Center. He researched and wrote on this very thing, the whole idea of the nuns as an emerging phenomenon back 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Zuckerman, despite opinions to the contrary, cites abundant evidence that secular Americans are every bit as capable as their religious neighbors of raising deeply moral children, building strong communities, and grappling meaningfully with the big questions of life and death, end quote. In his book, Zuckerman, quote, identifies the virtues of spiritual self-reliance, clear-eyed pragmatism, and abiding faith in the golden rule as the basis for a unique moral code shared across secular society for centuries and millennia. And most importantly, he offers ways for the reader to integrate these beliefs into their own lives. Why is irreligion rising? Have you paid any attention to the stories that have been three in a row in 1 week in The Guardian, the London major London newspaper, the left-wing newspaper that we read? Well, we also read The Telegraph. But The Guardian, for 3 days in a row, had a story about the decline of religion in England, the United Kingdom, specifically in the Church of England, which is the state church, which of course Anglicans or Episcopalians in this country are direct descendants of. Why is this rising? Why is irreligion rising? There have always been people who doubted religious teachings. We had Thomas Jefferson over 200 years ago. They were suspicious of priests, as Jefferson said. I can speak to that too. They were suspicious of rabbis, gurus, imams, and felt uncomfortable in church pews, particularly the hard non-padded. Zuckerman writes, secularization is the historical process whereby religious faith, religious involvement, religious identification, and religious institutions weaken, fade, or become less significant in society, end quote. Consider this. In Canada, our neighbors to the north, of which we have behind us living in three or four houses, snowbirds have come down for the winter so they don't have to deal with Toronto in December and January. In Canada, 100 years ago, only 2% of the population claimed to have no religion. Only 2% said, oh no, I don't have religion. But today, nearly 30% of Canadians claim as much, and approximately 1 in 5 say they do not believe in a God. This is even more observable in Europe. Where in Great Britain, nearly half the people now claim no religious identity of any kind. The percentage of Americans, bless our little church heart, the percentage of Americans who claim none when asked their religion has grown from less than 10% in 1990 to somewhere between 20 and 30% today. It is the fastest growing orientation in the country.
Zuckerman says somewhere between 9% and 21% of Americans are now atheist or agnostic, the highest rates of non-belief ever seen in the history of the United States of America. Question, why is this? Phil says, the causes are most likely to be political and sociological in nature. Well, he should know, he's a sociologist. Research indicates that much of the growth of the nuns in America is largely attributable to a reaction against an increased over-mixing of Christianity and conservative politics. Just witness the ongoing election campaign. A second factor is the devastation of and reaction against the Roman Catholic Church's pedophile priest scandal. Zuckerman says a third possible factor is the dramatic increase of women in the paid labor force. With more and more women working and away from home, their religious involvement tends to diminish. They don't have time for St. Anne's Guild and Episcopal Church women. Add to this the greater acceptance of homosexuality in American culture, and last but not least, the ubiquity of the internet. But for almost all these people questioned that Zuckerman interviewed, the biggest reason they have jettisoned religion is their disbelief in the supernatural. This leads Phil to examine what the humanist community, places like us, places like the Jefferson Center, can do in the light of this. Creating and developing humanist community centers that provide all that religions do, minus the theologies, minus the faith, and minus the gods. In the concluding pages of his book, he argues that, quote, a lack of belief in God does not render this world any less wondrous, any less lush, any less mystifying, any less amazing. A free-thinking, secular orientation does not mean that one experiences a cold, colorless existence, devoid of aesthetic inspiration, mystical wonder, unabashed appreciation, existential joy, or a deep sense of connection with other people, with nature, and with the incomprehensible. Quite the contrary. One not have God and feel and experience awe, A-W-E. And that's the title of his last chapter, Experiencing Awe, Awe-ism. One just needs life. How many times have I said that tonight? He ends by noting that the only solutions to the problems of this world will come from this world as well. Human willpower, rational inquiry, as Sandra Pointer knows so well, I love this term, critical thinking, scientific discovery, database decision making, evidence-based policy making, and frequent dashes of hope, empathy, optimism, and creativity. This is truly a book to be read, my friends, to be savored and discussed with others, and I really heartily recommend it. If there's no other book on that list that I gave out to you to read, this is the one to read. So I hope I have given you a broad enough overview of the latest in the books on non-religion and the secular life that I've spent the last year reading. It is a growing phenomenon in this country, as it has been in Europe, particularly in Scandinavia, where there is hardly anyone in churches. They go there to be baptized, married, and buried, and that is basically it. It is a growing phenomenon in this country. We have surveyed much of the current literature that supports this claim, that sustains this outlook of life. It will be of benefit only if you take it up and practice it. So with that in mind, I leave you again
With some words I said to you, drink. I say to you again words that I said to you in April 2011. Continue being a place to promote critical thinking and intellectual honesty in your programs. Provide a place where people can come together to rationally discuss various issues affecting our world, our country, our local area, and us as individuals, all without the veneer of a religious worldview. The fields are ripe for sowing and reaping, and although our relationship is not numbered in the hundreds or the thousands, we have, and I hope we will continue, to have a beneficial impact on our communities in the Rogue Valley and beyond. So be assured of my continuing interest in the work of this center and its membership. Continue my dream and the dreams of those wonderful original six founders by getting more involved, offering your time, talent, and treasure, and spreading the word that there is an organization right here in the Rogue Valley that has something different to say that can be part of a better society. And thank you all from the bottom of my heart for listening. I appreciate it.